Welcome back to the game. News Radio KMAN, Tyler and Mitch with you this afternoon, at least for a few more minutes here. Then Mitch is going to head over to Bramlage Coliseum. K-State women taking on the Baylor Bears. It's kind of, Baylor is the women's basketball equivalent to KU. If you want to be the best in the Big 12, you got to start by knocking out the Baylor Bears. So we'll see what Jeff Mitty's team is able to accomplish tonight. K-State on the men's side falls to Iowa State 70-65 last night in a wild, wild game in which the Wildcats rally from a 20-point deficit in the second half, take the lead, but then fall short down the stretch. Here's what it did in terms of the computers. K-State's RPI fell from 39-43, a real sky fall there. Their strength of schedule did increase with it. So as far as the NCAA tournament, last night's game really does not mean very much at all. As we said going into the game, there was a lot more to gain for K-State than lose. But it does put a little bit more pressure on you to take care of your business in your next two games. At Tennessee, which was always going to be a nice win for the resume, but it's an even better one since Tennessee beat Kentucky last night. They are number 52 in the RPI, so you got a fringe top 50 right there. And then your next game, as you return to Big 12 conference play, is at home against TCU on or that's going to be next Tuesday against TCU on February 1st. They are RPI 37 right now. After that, your next two games are at Baylor and versus KU. So I would recommend that K-State win both of these games. Going 1-1 over the next two would put them really dangerously to being on the wrong side of the bubble. They are still in the tournament as of today, but it would be nice for K-State to pick up another top 50 win here over the next week.
Well, certainly in Big 12 play, it's going to get tough. Talking with Brendan over here, we're talking about how good Tennessee really is. The thing is, I mean, Tennessee, they're not a bad club. They don't have the record to really show up, but they're obviously talented if they can beat Kentucky. But you can't let the Kentucky win for Tennessee play mind games with you. It has absolutely nothing to do with what happens on Saturday. K-State beat West Virginia last week. What does that have to do with Tennessee? Nothing. They just happen to be playing one of those teams from that game who happened to win. I mean, yeah. Upsets happen all the time in college basketball. When you think about that game, and you think, oh, no, Tennessee just beat Kentucky. How are the Cats going to beat Tennessee now on the road on a Saturday afternoon? The place will probably be packed. K-State goes in there and plays K-State basketball. That's how you win a game on the road.
Well, I think that Tennessee is a decent team. I would fall short of saying that they're a really talented team. I mean, if you just want to look at the facts here, they're 11-9 so far this season, and that's just 10-9 against Division I teams. One of their wins was in Maui against Division II Chaminade. So there are certainly some weaknesses with this Tennessee team. They really have struggled to win at home over the course of this season. I believe they've lost three home games already this year. They were able to put things together for a win over Kentucky last night, but I always wonder with Kentucky how close to 100% they're actually playing in terms of effort, because you know that they're going to be the hunted all the time. And I mean, Kentucky's a program that's going to get cocky every now and then. They're going to walk into a gym and assume they're going to win by 30. And situations like last night can happen where they get surprised and end up losing. I'm not saying that Tennessee is a bad basketball team. They're okay. They're solid. But I think that on a neutral court, the reason that we are having a discussion about K-State potentially losing this game is because it's on the road. If this game were in Bramlage Coliseum, I think K-State wins by double digits. On a neutral court, I think they win by at least, you know, 6 or 8 or 10 points, in my opinion. But you just never know what this team is going to do on the road. That's the problem.
I mean, this certainly isn't a Georgia road trip where, I mean, Georgia's probably not that good. I mean, I have no idea how good Georgia is this year. But do you really feel that playing in the SEC is actually probably better than playing in a Big 12 road environment?
Oh, no, it's worse.
You think so?
An SEC road game is easier to win than a Big 12 road game, if that's what you're talking about.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah. No one shows up to those games absolutely no one. It's amazing. And I'm not just talking about like the bottom of the barrel teams like Missouri, because Missouri has like eight people that show up to their games right now. But I was, for some reason, I was watching, it was the Alabama-Auburn game. You know, that's a rivalry game. Alabama-Auburn, I know that it's not the Iron Bowl, it's not football, but you still want to beat your in-state rival. It was at Alabama, and it was maybe 50% full.
Well, did you watch the end of that Tennessee-Kentucky game last night?
Yeah.
At one point, I flipped right over the K-State, after the K-State game got over, and the crowd reaction, there had to be a ton of Kentucky fans there. Because you could hear a go, whatever chant Kentucky has, you could hear it very loudly while Tennessee was on offense. And then Tennessee fans basically bit the bait and started trying to boo to drown them out. In the same time, you're creating a lot of noise for your when your offense is trying to get things done. Kentucky lived by the three ball last night, kind of like what KU did last night as well. It wasn't a blowout at all. It was just a two-point win.
I think that beating Kentucky gives Tennessee a little bit of a shot in the arm, but I don't think it's to the extent that it's going to be a full arena when K-State goes there on Saturday. I think there's going to be a lot of empty seats. Let's make a transition now and check out an update from the hot stove.
It's getting hot in here.
Hot stove.
At one time, there was HDH. And it was the most guaranteed victory in baseball. If you handed the lead, if the Royals handed the lead to Herrera, Davis, and Holland, you could go ahead and head to bed if you wanted to, because you knew how that game was going to end. Well, the D and one of the H's are now gone. Wade Davis, obviously, with the Cubs. Greg Holland now was a free agent, and one that it was rumored that the Royals were still trying to make something happen with. He missed all of last season after having Tommy John surgery toward the end of 2015, but it didn't work out with a deal with the Royals. He signs a one-year deal today with the Colorado Rockies. Greg Holland is heading to Colorado on a one-year, $7 million deal with a vesting option, according to Yahoo Sports' Jeff Passan. Incentives could push the deal to $10 million for non-closing duties or $14 million if he becomes the closer. The Rockies are taking a chance on him because he has not been the same guy since he started dealing with a lot of these injuries. But when he's been at his best, he's been one of the best in the game. And I'm going to miss him in Royal Blue. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, well, if Greg Holland wanted to go somewhere where he's going to do the maximum amount of pitching as a reliever, he found the right spot.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, I always wonder why a pitcher would, of their own free will, sign with the Colorado Rockies. But, hey, good for him. I'm glad that he was able to land on his feet somewhere, because for a relief pitcher who's on the backside of his career and one who just had Tommy John surgery, there's a chance that he could have not pitched in the majors again. I know that people were talking about that at one point. And something else that was being discussed on the interwebs today: who are you going to miss more, Wade Davis or Greg Holland? I think it's pretty easy, at least for me, it's Wade Davis. He was the pitcher that closed out the World Series. The Wade Davis at his best, in my opinion, was better than Greg Holland at his best. But I'm going to miss both of them. It is definitely going to be weird this next season to see those guys in different uniforms.
Yeah, if you remember in 2015, the Royals didn't have Greg Holland for the World Series, or for the postseason for that matter, because of the Tommy John surgery, and completely missed all of last year. So the Rockies, I mean, themselves are taking a chance on Greg Holland because he hasn't pitched in a while. I think they're going to get a lot of good things out of him, but as a personal fan of his, I just hope he can stay healthy because he's going to be worked a lot, I'm sure.
Now, this really stands out when I read into more details with what the Royals have on their roster right now. Actually, I'm going to put you on the spot here. The Royals have three relievers on their roster that made at least 30 relief appearances last year. How many can you name?
Well, Kelvin Herrera.
Yes.
Man, you're putting me on the spot.
Yeah, I know. The second one is pretty easy. The last one is darn near impossible.
Well, would Chris Young be up there?
Nope. Second one is all of our favorite, Joaquin Soria.
Oh, I always forget about him.
Yeah, it's...
It's because
he was
forgettable.
Not yeah, yeah. It was not his best season last year. But yeah, Kelvin Herrera and Joaquin Soria are two of them. The third one is Brian Flynn. Those are the three guys that the Royals have that actually made 30 relief appearances last year. Luke Hochaver and Peter Moylan are still both free agents, by the way. We'll see if the Royals have any interest in that. Ken Rosenthal reported that the Royals had about $2.5 million that they could still spend. This was before, and I really hate that this comes to this now, but that was before the death of Yordano Ventura. So the Royals, with their money situation, may have a little bit more flexibility now in the most horrible of circumstances.
Well,
but we'll have to see what they do, because the fact of the matter is the Royals do not have enough guys in the bullpen at the moment.
To give you a little bit of info on what is to come with Yordano Ventura's money, it depends on what comes back on this toxicology report. Either way, I think that, because I think there's, what, 19, 20 million?
Yeah, 20 million, but it is at least partially insured. I know.
Right, and that's an amount we don't know about yet, because if it comes back and he wasn't drinking or anything before that accident and it was just an accidental thing, his family is going to get the rest of his contract. It's going to go to his estate, and that's going to go to his family, and then the Royals will get some of that back from insurance. But if he was drinking, most likely, and under the influence, most likely the Royals won't pay any of that out, so they'll keep the money.
It's it stings to talk about it still, but there comes a point when business is business, and you do have to start talking about this, because we're only a few weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting to Surprise Arizona, and the Royals still believe that they can make a run at it this year, and maybe a couple years into the future, we'll see. But if they're going to do that, they have to work through this tragic situation and find a way to bolster the roster that they have. So that's the latest from the Royals and from Greg Holland. Best of luck to him in Denver with the Colorado Rockies. Going to head to our next break. When we come back, a former K-State Wildcat, and one that Mitch mentioned in his last update, is tearing it up down at the Senior Bowl. One statistic that will blow your mind. Coming up next on the game.